There's definitely an escalation, and it really points to the need for the United States to work with the international community to provide some leadership to end this crisis. Unfortunately, instead of providing that leadership, the U.S. vetoed in the U.N. Last week a resolution that called on all sides to cease hostility, and it also called for the return of the kidnapped Israeli soldiers. John Bolton, the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., vetoed the resolution on the grounds that it was, quote-unquote, unbalanced.
So let's talk more broadly about the U.S. role in the situation, going back a little further than this present situation. What has been and continues to be the United States' approach towards this conflict in Israel-Palestine? What has been our diplomatic, financial, and military involvement in the situation?
Well, I think it's very important to remember that while both Israel and Hamas and Hezbollah have done things which negate which conflict with the standards of war found in the Geneva Conventions, there's only one side to this conflict which the United States is really responsible for backing. And every time that Israel fires a missile or uses its navy or its air force or its tanks to purposefully target civilian infrastructure, be it in the Gaza Strip or in Lebanon, and to injure and kill civilians, those weapons are all being purchased and given to Israel by U.S. taxpayers. We fund Israel to the tune of $2.43 billion worth of weapons every year. That's what Congress is appropriating for Israel for 2007. And it's these very weapons, the F-16s, the F-15s, the Abrams M1 tanks, the entire Israeli Navy, which are all composed of equipment given to Israel by the U.S. taxpayer. So these are really our weapons that are being used against Palestinians and Lebanese civilians. And it's our responsibility as citizens of the United States to step in and say that our country really needs to be the honest broker that it says it is. And that means not providing any side to a conflict with weapons. Because when you provide one side to a conflict with weapons, you've, under international law, broken the laws of neutrality and declared yourself to be on the side which you arm. So we are, in fact, under international law, on Israel's side in this conflict.
You spoke about some of the military support. What about the financial and the diplomatic backing that Israel gets from the U.S.?
The diplomatic support, I think, is very crucial. The United States has cast 8 out of the last 9 vetoes in the UN at the Security Council. Of those 8 vetoes that the U.S. has cast, 7 of them have been to protect Israel and to prevent the international community from taking any type of effective situation to bring the Israeli-Palestinian conflict to a peaceful resolution. There is an international consensus. At one point, the United States actually subscribed to it, and that was UN Security Council Resolution 242, which was passed in the aftermath of the 1967 Israeli-Arab conflict war, which said that in exchange for withdrawing from the territories that Israel had occupied, which today the Palestinian territories of the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem, that Israel would receive recognition and security arrangements with all of its neighbors. That's always formed the basis for any type of diplomatic effort, but the United States has been using its veto at the UN to prevent the implementation of UN Resolution 242, to prevent, for example, the sending of an international peacekeeping or protection force to separate the Israeli military from the Palestinian civilian population.
What about financial support? How much money does the U.S. Give to Israel each year, and in what form is that money given?
The United States gives economic aid as well to Israel to the tune of, I believe it's around $300 million for 2007 is what Congress is proposing. During the late 1990s, when Benjamin Netanyahu was the prime minister of Israel, on one of his visits to Congress, he struck a deal with Congress to increase military aid every year and decrease economic aid. So the relative amount of military aid that we provide to Israel as part of our overall package of aid is going up, while economic aid is going down. But that economic aid is still very important. It's basically a blank check that we turn over to the Israeli Treasury each year, and we have no idea how those funds are expended. Undoubtedly, they help Israel to maintain its illegal military occupation of the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem. Undoubtedly, it helps them free up money to spend on things that violate international law, like Israel's illegal settlements, like the illegal apartheid wall that it's building in the West Bank, and so forth. So for Israel, which, like the United States, spends a huge amount of its budget on defense, or offense in this case, it really helps them to take the pressure off having this guns versus butter debate within Israeli society.
On the Jewish Voice for Peace website, it says, they say that U.S. military aid to Israel has increasingly been used not to pay for defense, but to finance the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, without the military aid that the United States provides, I don't think there's any way that Israel could physically maintain the occupation and maintain the siege policies that it does on Palestinian territories. Just to give you an idea of the extent to which the United States is responsible for arming Israel, every year the State Department is responsible for sending to Congress what's known as a Section 655 report, which is required under the terms of the Arms Export Control Act. And it lists every single weapon that the United States licensed to a foreign country. In the case of Israel, the annual report is about 4 pages long of types of weapons that we provide to Israel. Everything that the Israeli army is outfitted with practically comes from the United States and is paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. Now, what's ironic here is that the Arms Export Control Act actually says that the only purposes that U.S. weapons can be used for abroad are for internal policing or for legitimate self-defense. They're never envisioned to be for offensive military occupations or offensive military invasions or attacks, and they're certainly never supposed to be used to deliberately target civilians and civilian infrastructure, which Israel has been doing mercilessly over the last month, not only in the Gaza Strip, but now in Lebanon as well.
Also on the Jewish Voice for Peace website, which if anybody wants to look at it, is jewishvoiceforpeace.org, in talking about aid to Israel, they say more U.S. aid goes to Israel than any other country, even though Israel's per capita income is as high as many European countries. They say in the fiscal year 2003, Israel received a foreign military financing grant of $3.1 billion, a $600 million grant for economic security, in addition to $11 billion in commercial loan guarantees. They say the total aid package was nearly $15 billion, which makes Israel by far the largest single recipient of U.S. aid, and they say total direct aid to Israel since 1948, between 1948 and 2003, not corrected for inflation, is about $90 billion. Do these figures sound accurate to you, and can you talk about the breakdown of the aid, how a lot of it's not direct exactly financial aid? There's other ways that we, like the loan guarantees. Can you
right,
talk about
absolutely.
That?
Sure. The loan guarantees aren't exactly direct aid. I'll explain the program, give you an overview of it. Back in 2004, I believe it was, in one of the several supplemental appropriations that Congress passed in order to finance our war and occupation of Iraq, the White House included a request for $10 billion in loan guarantees for Israel. And the way this program works is that the United States kind of acts as a banker of last resort. If Israel were to default on any loan that it takes out on a commercial basis, Now, so far, to the best of my understanding, I don't believe Israel has ever defaulted on a loan, and the U.S. has had to pick up the tab for that. But what it does is it helps Israel with its loan term payments. In other words, because the United States is acting as the banker of last resorts and the payer of last resorts on these loans, Israel is able to borrow rates at a lower rate because it has a higher credit rating than it would be able to on its own. So we're basically enabling Israel to save money on loans that it takes out on the international market.
You're listening to 101.1 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm speaking with Josh Rubner. He is grassroots advocacy coordinator of the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation. Their website is endtheoccupation.org, and on the homepage, there's a document there. You can check it out. It gives a breakdown of the attacks on Palestinian and Lebanese civilians and civilian infrastructure in the Gaza Strip and Lebanon. And beginning statement of this article, Stop Israel's Attacks on Gaza and Lebanon, before they go into the documentation of the attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructure, it says Israel is using weapons supplied by the United States to target Palestinian and Lebanese civilians and civilian infrastructure in the Gaza Strip and Lebanon in violation of the U.S. Arms Export Control Act and the Geneva Conventions. Josh, can you give us a little more detail on that, please, on that
Well,
statement?
Sure. Absolutely. The Geneva Conventions explicitly rule out the possibility of a state or a non-state actor purposefully targeting civilians in any type of military situation. I believe that when Hamas and when Hezbollah attack civilian targets in Israel, that too should be condemned as a violation of the Geneva Conventions. But what Israel is doing is completely to, in a very systematic way, to destroy the civilian infrastructure of the Gaza Strip and of Lebanon in what can only be described as an act of collective punishment. In other words, the innocent civilians in the Gaza Strip and in Lebanon are being forced to pay for the acts of Hamas or Hezbollah, whether they approve of them or not. And this type of collective punishment is outlawed under international law, and it's even considered a war crime. So for the United States to be enabling these war crimes to happen, I think really speaks volumes about what our priorities are in terms of our foreign policy. If we really supported the notion of promoting human rights around the globe, we wouldn't continue to arm Israel to the teeth in order to commit these human rights violations, in order to commit these egregious violations of the Geneva Conventions. We would be acting in a way consistent with our own domestic laws to prohibit the transfer of military aid to a country that consistently acts in a way that violates human rights laws. And that prohibition is found in the U.S. Foreign Assistance Act, which says very clearly that no country that violates human rights standards in a pattern is eligible to receive any type of U.S. aid. But we don't hear in our newspaper, in our mainstream media whatsoever about how all these civilian deaths, Palestinian, Lebanese, are attributable to U.S. weapons. And it's really no wonder, in my mind, why so many people around the world are upset with our foreign policy towards Israel, because we're directly responsible for these civilian deaths and for the destruction of civilian infrastructure.
You've been talking about Israel's human rights violations, the destruction of civilian infrastructure, the violations of Geneva Conventions, etc., and, of course, the violations of our own U.S. Arms Export Control Act. Give me a rundown of some of the weaponry that Israel is using that's made here in the United States that's being used to conduct these human rights violations.
Israel's squadrons of Air Force fighters are composed currently of two types. One is a Lockheed Martin F-16 Fighting Falcon, and the other is a Boeing F-15. Both of these are made in the United States. Both of these were paid for by the U.S. taxpayer and given to Israel. The majority of the killing and destruction of civilian infrastructure over the past month has been accomplished by Israel with these U.S. weapons. And even the missiles that Israel fires from the F-16s and the F-15s, the AMRAAMs, Sidewinders, Sparrow missiles, for example, all of these are also purchased by the taxpayer and given to Israel.
You're breaking up a little, just so you know.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's okay. I heard you, but you were breaking up slightly. So, these U.S.-supplied weapons, you're saying these are primarily the weapons used to attack civilians and destroy civilian infrastructure?
Absolutely. In addition to the Air Force fighter planes that I mentioned, the United States has provided, by the way, the United States has provided more than $1 billion of spare parts, engines, and missiles for Israel to use in its F-15 and F-16s over the last 5 years. Over the last 5 years, the United States has given the Israeli Navy almost $600 million worth of patrol boats, ships, submarines, and components and spare parts for these naval vessels, as well as torpedoes and sonar equipment. And these are the boats now that are blockading all of Lebanon's ports and forcing the very basis of Lebanon's economy to come to a grinding halt because no imports or exports are capable of blocking this blockade that Israel has put on by land and by sea.
I'm speaking with Josh Rubner, grassroots advocacy coordinator of the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation. Their website is endtheoccupation.org. Can you give me a rundown of some of your major campaigns at the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation?
Sure. The U.S. campaign is a nationwide coalition of more than 200 organizations which have come together to challenge the current U.S. policy towards Israel-Palestine, which is very much supportive of Israel's military occupation, and to try to change that policy to support human rights and international law. One of our coalition partners is actually based in Santa Cruz, and we work very closely with the Resource Center for Nonviolence. So if anyone's interested in getting involved locally, please contact them. One of our main campaigns right now is against the Caterpillar Corporation. We've supported the call from Palestinian civil society for campaigns of boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel until it complies with human rights and until Palestinians can exercise freedom and self-determination and equality. Our contribution to that campaign is to pressure the Caterpillar Corporation, the maker of bulldozers and other earth-moving equipment, to stop selling these machines to the Israeli army because they're being used to commit numerous human rights violations against Palestinians. The demolition of homes, thousands of them, Israel has demolished over the past few years. The uprooting of hundreds of thousands of olive trees and other fruit-bearing trees. The construction of illegal Israeli colonies on Palestinian lands. And the building of the apartheid segregation wall that Israel's constructing right now in the West Bank. All of these human rights violations are being facilitated by Caterpillar, by the equipment that they're selling to the Israeli military. And in addition to that, a number of both Palestinians and an American citizen by the name of Rachel Corey were killed by these Caterpillar bulldozers in operations by Israel to destroy Palestinian homes. So we're calling on the CEO of Caterpillar to end the sale of these bulldozers to Israel. Unfortunately, Caterpillar, like every other corporation, is ruled by profit motive and will do anything possible to pad their bottom line. So they're not really interested in stopping the sale of these bulldozers. So we're trying to shame them into doing so, and we're also trying to put economic pressure on them not to do so. So if you have a business or a school or a university or a church or any other type of religious institution that you would like to declare a Caterpillar-free zone, please check out our website for some resources on that and make a statement that your institution will not use Caterpillar products until Caterpillar ceases to profit from Palestinian human rights violations.
You also have another campaign against the Palestinian anti-terrorism legislation, the so-called Palestinian Anti-Terrorism Act of 2006, and the which is really anti-Palestinian legislation. You have a campaign against that. Can you talk about it?
It's very anti-Palestinian. In fact, it's the most hostile anti-Palestinian legislation that I think has ever been proposed in Congress. It was voted on in the House a couple of months ago. Fortunately, Representative Sam Farr voted against it. He was one of, I believe, 38 members of Congress to vote against it. So he should definitely be thanked for voting not to impose really draconian economic and diplomatic sanctions against the Palestinians for doing what is supposed to be the cornerstone of our foreign policy, which is exercising democracy. In the aftermath of the Hamas victory in the Palestinian legislative election, Congress said, well, not only do we need to cut off any ties with the Palestinian Authority and with Hamas, but let's try to kick PLO diplomats out of the United States. Let's try to the World Bank to cut off any projects that it has, humanitarian projects in the occupied Palestinian territories. And let's try to treat Palestinian diplomats at the UN as if they're terrorists. All this grab bag of anti-Palestinian legislation was attempted to be ramrodded through Congress. Unfortunately, its supporters had a hard time getting it through, and the House and the Senate still have to reconcile their versions, their two different versions of this bill. So there's still time to contact your senators and your representative to urge them not to impose these really harsh sanctions on the Palestinian people, especially the House version, which calls for a cutoff of all but a very limited amount of humanitarian aid to the Palestinians. And in fact, for the 2007 budget, while we're busy providing Israel with $2.5 billion of arms to prosecute its illegal occupation of Palestinian land, the House decided to cut off all funding for humanitarian projects for Palestinians.
Again, I'm speaking with Josh Rubner. He is with the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation. You can go to their website at endtheoccupation.org. And there on the site, the top story or the top action alert is Stop Israel's Attacks on Gaza and Lebanon. And you can read some background on that, as well as a list of some of the civilians and civilian infrastructure that have been targeted, civilians that have been killed, and civilian infrastructure targeted by U.S.-made weapons. What can people do about this, Josh? What can American citizens do to change this?
Well, I think that most members of Congress have the idea that the people of the United States like our current policy towards Israel-Palestine. And there's this presumption, which I think is often made on a very racist basis, that Israelis are somehow more like us than Palestinians. And I think that this informs a lot of our bias toward this policy, in addition to the fact that we have incredibly strong, powerful lobbies that are set up to advocate for the continuation of U.S. support for Israel's military occupation and human rights violations. What we need to do in this country is to really change this political calculus of our decision-makers and to organize and to mobilize to tell our decision-makers that we're unhappy with this policy, that this policy does not promote human rights, does not promote democracy, does not promote freedom. In fact, it promotes the very opposite. It promotes keeping the entire Palestinian people in servitude, in a degraded state, living under military occupation in the Gaza Strip, West Bank, and East Jerusalem, living as third-class citizens within Israel proper, and living as refugees who have been forcibly exiled from their historical homeland. So we're not supporting human rights when it comes to the Palestinians, and we're not supporting their democracy and self-determination. So we really need to organize to change this calculation and tell our decision makers that we want to see a truly even-handed policy that supports freedom for all, equality, and above all, human rights for Israelis and Palestinians.
And what about the media?
The media, I think, is very crucial as well. I think this goes back to the racist presumption that I mentioned a little while ago about this idea that Israelis are somehow more like us and Palestinians are the Muslim other who somehow have less rights, have less human dignity, who have less of a desire to live in freedom and peace than other people in the world. And I think that type of racist assumption underlies a lot of our policies towards not only the Middle East, but the entire Muslim world. So we need to get over this notion of a clash of civilizations and really see all human beings as equally valuable and equally deserving of human rights.
Thanks so much for joining me today, Josh. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, George. I appreciate the opportunity.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, Josh Rubner is grassroots advocacy coordinator of the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation, and you can check out their website at endtheoccupation.org, where you can read the action alert that lays out the numbers of civilians killed and some of the civilian infrastructure that's been attacked by U.S.-made weapons, by Israel with U.S.-made weapons, and about the type of weapons that we supply Israel with, as well as other aid and support that we are giving to Israel that they say fuels the occupation. You can also read about their campaign, their Caterpillar campaign, demanding an end of Caterpillar bulldozer sales to Israel. And you can read about the national campaign against anti-Palestinian legislation as well. And again, the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation is a diverse coalition working for freedom from occupation and equal rights for all by challenging U.S. policy towards the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The campaign is based on human rights and international law, providing a non-sectarian framework for everyone who supports its call to action. Its strategy is to inform, educate, and mobilize the public so as to change the U.S. role in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict to support peace, justice, human rights, and international law. You can go to their website at endtheoccupation.org. Josh Rubner also mentioned the Resource Center for Nonviolence as a local group that is part of that coalition. You can go to their website at rcnv.org. That stands for Resource Center for Nonviolence, rcnv.org. Or you can give them a call at 423-1626. That's 423-1626 to contact the Resource Center for Nonviolence.